all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Bob Gould.
And here we are, another program here at Veterans Radio, right here on Wham Radio. How's our levels doing there, Derek? We're doing all right. Yeah, we got thumbs up because we got a whole hour coming right here today, folks. That's right, live right here on Big Talk Radio 1600 WAAM, right in the beautiful, beautiful heart of the Midwest, the garden spot of the Midwest, Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's right. Ann Arbor, Michigan. This is Bob Gould. And boy, we have a Marine program. All about Marines today. Mm-hmm. We've been doing a lot of Marines. And something that I've wanted to follow up on for so long, being a scout. What's being a scout? And how does that fit in? Did you ever think about that? Scout. Okay. Well, a couple things though. Coming up, we have an anniversary. That's right. Chuck Yeager, remember him? Chuck Yeager, the guy who had the right stuff. Thomas Wolfe wrote about him in the book, The Right Stuff. Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier 67 years ago on October the 14th. Chuck Yeager was a combat fighter during World War II. He had shot down 13 German planes, so that made him almost a triple ace. But he himself, he was shot down over France, and he escaped capture by help with the French resistance and the French underground. After the war, he became a volunteer with the Air Force, and he, now remember, he's being paid as an Air Force, I think he was a colonel back then, and he was to work with the X-1 rocket plane built by the Bell aircraft. They were looking to break the sound barrier. Back then, for many years, there were folks that believed that we just could not have a vehicle that would go faster than the speed of sound because the whole plane would, or the vehicle would disintegrate. Well, there was Chuck Yeager, and he was dropped out of a belly of a B-29, and he was at about 25,000 feet. He then rocketed now up to 40,000 feet to get to that speed. But we had him on the program, and many years ago. By the way, if you go to veteransradio.net, you can listen to that on the archives, or email me, bob@veteransradio.net, and I'll find out when that was broadcast. But we asked Chuck Yeager, yes, we had him on the program, and he said it was all down to me. He had one button. When the X-1 dropped from the B-29, he had one button. He had five rockets. He had one button, and when he hit that button, the thing was either going to blow up or take off, and all five rockets ignite. Well, you know what happened then. And Chuck Yeager went to 662 miles per hour in the X-1 rocket plane, which was named Glamorous Glennis after his wife. And it was designed like a 50 caliber bullet. It only had small, thin wings. So it was designed to do one thing: go fast, man. And that's what it did. It went fast, and even though it was a little under the speed of sound because of the altitude, it made it the speed of... I don't understand all that physics, folks. I mean, I'm kind of reading the piece here. But I'll never forget that in the movie The Right Stuff, because there it was. He had a broken arm, and he... That's right. He broke his arm the night before, and there was no way he was going to tell the muckety mucks that he had that, because he was not going to lose his time in history. And he did it. He made it happen. He broke the sound barrier. But because of the secrecy of the project, it was not announced until June of the following year. So on October the 14th of this year will be the 67th anniversary, and that's when he did it. back in 1947, but it was not announced to the world until 1948. And he continued to be, Chuck Yeager did, to be a test pilot, and he flew at one time 1,650 miles per hour in an X-4 rocket plane. Wow. Boy, that was, He was then promoted to Brigadier General, and he's still alive today, and of course he's retired. But boy, we sure, it was one of the greatest moments in history that, as far as aviation goes. So a Veterans Radio salute to Chuck Yeager. Okay, getting right along. Oh, we got something coming up then. You know, this week is, in fact, this program is going to be about Marines. Well, what's coming up is the Marine birthday. And what does this celebration mean to Marines? That's right. November the 10th is going to be the 239th. Let's have a little bit of that under there. There we go. The 239th anniversary of the founding of the Marine Corps. That's right. And, you know, there's going to be all kinds of activities. You're going to want to go online, Google it, listen to Veterans Radio, go on our website. There's going to be all kinds of things about Marines and Marines. There's going to be something called a Marine Ball that's held in Maryland this year. We'll cover more of that between now and November the 10th. Actually, it's November the 9th for that. But what does the celebration mean to Marines across the globe? Well, the Marine Manual talks about celebrations and talks about the inclusion of the cake ceremony. Now, I'm going to ask one of our guests today about the cake ceremony. It's something to do with passing out, that's right, a piece of cake. They have a cake at this bash, and it's symbolic because one key piece of the passing of the first piece of cake from senior to junior Marines is a symbolic gesture of the passing of experience and knowledge. That tradition begins in recruit training and at OCS school, where knowing where one comes from, knowing your past and living up to that example is emblazoned in the minds of those in training. So the Marines pass on the tradition, pass on all the honor that is bestowed upon Marines. And it's to that end that we should evaluate the example and take part in history. Enjoy the fruits of your labor and revel in the spectacular and unabashed camaraderie that can be found at the Marine Corps Ball. We'll be right back, right after this.
Living at American House is like being on a cruise ship with all the lovely surroundings, the many, many activities, and the people to share with. It's so comfortable to be here. I feel safe. I don't have to shop. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean up.
When you move into an American House senior living community, you open the door to a new world of possibilities. Our life enrichment directors are committed to enhancing the lives of residents every day. We look forward to finding out what interests you.
I just get dressed up and walk down to the dining room and enjoy my meals in the company of other people at my table.
For more moments made in American House, go to AmericanHouse.com. Again, that's AmericanHouse.com. Or watch us at YouTube.com/AmericanHouseLiving.
Living here has enriched my life. I'm Carol Huck, and I made in American House.
And we're back on Veterans Radio on my Marine Day. Yes, Marine Day, and I have two Marines are going to be my guests today. My first guest is Enon Weiss, CEO, President of Rally Point. Rally Point is a professional organization for military personnel, both past and present, that offer all kinds of communications, getting together, and to have a way to rally. And it is a rallying point, which is one of the when we were in exercises, we always went around to the RP. The RP. Enon Weiss is the president and CEO of Rally Point. Enon, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and I also wanted to mention you served 10 years in active duty, first as a Marine Corps scout, sniper, platoon commander. Ooh, I want to get into that. And then as an Army Special Forces officer. Ooh, both services. Mm-hmm. You were deployed overseas multiple times through your career before you co-founded Rally Point. So here we go. Scouts. All right. I saw a program that had to do with the Revolutionary War. And there was General Burgoyne of the British was marching down the coast, the Atlantic coast. He was going to split the American patriots and disarm them. He had a large force. He had all the equipment. He had the soldiers. He had everything. And he had scouts. He had scouts. He had Indian scouts. They were very important because they knew the terrain. They knew the area. He had thousands of troops and 100-plus scouts. So what did the Americans do? Mm-hmm. Aha. This is where the Kentucky Long Rifle came in. That's right. And that was already in existence. And there were some, rebels, I guess you would call them. And they were harassing the British as they were marching down, and they shot the scouts. That's what they did. They would sniper shoot the scouts, and within 2-3 days, the scouts were gone. Most of them that weren't shot left. So that left Burgoyne with nobody. And you had to have the scouts. You had to have the scouts to have a mission. You had to have the scouts to find your way around. You had to have scouts for reconnaissance. You had to have scouts. So the scouts were important by then, and Burgoyne was defeated. Well, we have somebody today that can talk about that. Enon, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me.
I know. Second time. Here we are.
Yes.
As the commander, how many boots on the ground did you command?
So a typical Marine Corps scout sniper platoon, at least when I had it, was about 16 Marines, usually operating in teams of 2 to 4. So Marine Corps scouts don't go on their own. They work in buddy teams. And so you're in a buddy team of 2, or you may have 2 teams. You're a team of 4. And then you have 4 teams of 4. And although that's a 16, person platoon, which is smaller than some platoons, it has a huge impact on the operations of entire battalions of 500, 600, 700 Marines. They're very influential and very consequential, just like the story you just related.
Were they out there when they're going on a mission, when you all are going on a mission, is the scout the first one out there? I see this image of stealthily going along the ground and tree to tree, building the building and doing recon and such. Tell us about that.
Sure. In any regular military movement, you've got the military's main unit, right? The body, right? And that body is moving forward. And you need to have eyes and ears for that body because you don't want to walk into something and not have any idea what you're seeing. And so Scout snipers are often referred to as the eyes and ears of the Marine main body. And so you need to have scouts on the front, you know, towards the front of the unit. You need to have scouts on the flanks, to the left and to the right. And sometimes and often you might have scouts to the rear as well to protect your six. And so scout snipers are considered the eyes and ears of a unit so that the main body has enough time to respond to whatever they're going to find ahead of themselves.
How far ahead, maybe that's the word, of the unit, of the base unit, were the scouts? How far out in front did they work?
Sure. So every unit has, of a decent size, has scouts, essentially reconnaissance units that work for them. How far out in front they go depends on the size of the unit. And so, for example, the scout sniper I had was a Marine battalion, a classic infantry Marine battalion, which had, I don't know, 400, 500, 600 people or something like that at the time. And then how far away they are really depends on the terrain. And so when we're doing a vehicle movement, right, they may be a mile or a kilometer ahead or multiple kilometers ahead in the vehicle. But in an urban setting, it might be the difference of just being one block ahead, right, and putting in some scouts that are going to be sitting in overwatching a key intersection that the main unit is going to be on. So it really depends on the terrain, but the key thing is that the scouts are able to see at least one or two steps ahead of everybody else.
Now, what kind of a personality would it take to be a scout? I mean, obviously you got to be brave and have a lot of cojones, really, to do some of the things that you were just talking about. To be a mile out in front of the guys when you're out there by yourself. Whoa! So, what kind of an individual were you? Was it assigned when they came into your unit, or did they already have that when they came in your unit? Tell us about that.
Hey, good question. So a Marine Corps scout sniper is a volunteer position. Nobody forces you to do it. And so infantry battalions will take some of their best infantry Marines and give them an opportunity to apply to be in a scout sniper unit. Now, some people just want to stay in the infantry, and that's fine. But there are some people that are wired a little bit differently. And that, you know, they have an interest in being a scout sniper and a scout for the unit. And, you know, what I've seen is people that they like to be a little more autonomous, meaning they are comfortable acting independently, right? They're comfortable acting in a very small team of four or two and sometimes, you know, on their own, and acting in small teams, isolated from the main body, from the main support, and being able to go out there, and the kind of person that does that, I mean, that's somebody needs to have a lot of confidence, somebody that needs to have a lot of courage, like you said. I mean, and people that, I guess, you know, it's not that they don't have fear, but people that, you know, are able to cope with that fear.
Now, I Googled enlisted Marine Corps enlisted job descriptions, and there was a scout sniper on here. It was a scout sniper is a Marine skilled in field craft and marksmanship. What's field craft?
Yeah, great question. Field craft is an advanced skill that's not, you know, taught to most service members. It's basically another way of living from the ground, living on the, you know, taking advantage of the terrain that you're in. And so, for example, it might include knowing how to build a hide site, knowing how to camouflage yourself in different environments. It might mean knowing how to survive for longer periods of time with whatever is around you, knowing how to extract, you know, water from certain places, knowing how to conceal yourself, knowing how to be a little more one with nature, if you will. So it sounds a little bit odd to say that, but it's people who know skill sets that allow them to be independent and excel while in the field.
And they would probably have to know map reading, of course, and be able to call in coordinates. Is that true?
Sure. Land navigation is very important for anybody in the military, and especially for a scout. If you don't know where you are, you're a liability to everybody.
Now, the maps were not, from what I understand, some of the maps were made by the Russians, and that's what we had in the very beginning in Iraq and in Afghanistan. We had old maps. So what did the scouts do then?
Well, you always use the best map you can get your hands on. One of the problems, I was in the first invasion of Iraq in 2003. We went from the across the border in Kuwait and did the march up to Baghdad. One of the problems was that that's a huge, that was a huge span of space. I mean, it was driving over multiple days. Now, scouts on the ground are used to what's called 1 to 50,000 maps, so that the scale of the map is 1 to 50,000, right? But you would have to work through, like, 30 of those maps, and people literally had these giant map books, like 3 feet wide by 2 feet tall, like giant atlases, trying to thumb through, right, and figure out where we were as we went from, we jumped from one map to another. Now, that's fine when you're at the command headquarters, but that's not fine for, a lead vehicle or a scout that's separated from the main unit. And so sometimes people had these giant air maps that were what's called like a 1 to 250,000 scale that's used by pilots. Because that was the only map large enough to actually have both Kuwait and Baghdad on the same map. Right? It's kind of like if you're, you know, taking a trip from, you know, Boston to New York, but all your maps are little neighborhood maps, and you've got to piece them together. And so, you know, having maps was definitely a challenge. Everybody made it work and worked through it. But, you know, you use the best maps you can.
As a commander, what was the hardest thing that you had to do from day to day?
As a scout sniper platoon commander, I was not a scout. I was an employer of scouts, right? I was putting scouts in the right places at the right time to the best of my ability to fulfill our missions unit in higher headquarters intent. But I have to, you know, I want to be with the scouts, right? As a platoon commander, you always want to be in the foxhole, on the patrol with the guys. But as I said earlier, we might have 4 teams out or 8 teams out. And so somebody needs to coordinate all those teams. Somebody needs to make sure that if they need air support, they're going to have air support. And if they need to be resupplied, they're going to be resupplied. Somebody has to be their champion within the unit. And that falls in the platoon's leadership. But as a platoon leader, at the same time, you train these guys, and you want to go out and do the same stuff with them. And you can't always do that.
You had mentioned here in some bullet points that you emailed to me to talk about the difference between Marine Corps and the Army regarding mentality, et cetera. And why don't you be specific about that, Enon?
Sure. So I have to caveat and say I never served in the conventional regular Army because I went straight from the Marine Corps into the Army Special Forces, although I've certainly had – a lot of exposure and interaction with the conventional Army. So I really have to compare those two organizations. And they're very different. The Marine Corps and the Army are very different organizations. There's a very different mentality. The Marine Corps is a smaller organization, which makes a big difference. The Marine Corps has a little bit more esprit de corps uniqueness to them. Some of your readers may, or listeners may relate to this. If you're driving down a neighborhood in the United States, it's very common to find a Marine Corps flag or another, you know, 2 Marine Corps flags. You don't typically see an Army flag or a Navy flag or an Air Force flag. Those veterans often fly an American flag. And the difference is that Marines have a very strong sense of pride in their identity. They are a Marine first, right? And we always say there is no ex-Marines. There's once a Marine, you're always a Marine. So Marines have a very strong sense of pride in themselves, in what being a Marine is, in living up to the expectations of Marines before them, and being an example to the Marine ahead of them. There's a very strong esprit de corps. The Army is a much larger organization. And the Army, the Marine Corps, by the way, doesn't win wars. It doesn't pretend to try to win wars. The Marine Corps wins battles, and the Army wins wars. And I think both organizations are very comfortable with that mission set, at least as it's, you know, classically defined. So people in the Army think of themselves as serving the United States, usually first and foremost, and being a soldier. And Marines think of themselves being a Marine first.
And, of course, you being a commander was always aware of that and always bringing that up to your troops and embellishing that. Is that true?
Tapping into the pride that one has in being a Marine, I think, is what makes the Marine Corps such a strong organization.
Mm-hmm.
There is such a level of expectation of what it means to be a Marine. And you earn the title of Marine, right, in basic training. And there's a crucible event that you go to, and that's a life-changing event for many people. It moves some really tough people to, you know, have tears if they had any, if they weren't dehydrated so much. And it really moves them, and you earn the title of Marine. It's because you work so hard to get that, that's something you're very proud of. And yes, reminding people of how much that title means is a great incentive and motivation for them to uphold the tradition and the standards.
We're coming to our halfway. Can you believe that already? To the halfway point of the program. So we've got about a minute and a half, right, gang out there? They're all shaking their heads. Good. So I mentioned earlier about the Marine Ball coming up, the anniversary, November 10th, and the passing of the cake. We've got about 70 seconds. Tell us about the passing of the cake.
That's a great tradition. So any Marine Corps ball, you do it anywhere in the world, whether you're in a foxhole in Afghanistan or whether you're in a hotel in California. An annual tradition. You always do it with whatever you have. And there's a tradition where the youngest Marine, which is usually going to be 17 or 18 years old, and whoever the oldest Marine in the room is, whether that is a 35 or 85-year-old, they get together and they cut the cake with the Mameluke sword, which is the Marine Corps traditional sword. And there's a passing of the cake from the oldest Marine. And it's a cake given to the oldest Marine and the youngest Marine. It's a passing of the cake. And that represents the continuation of the tradition between those of previous generations and those of future generations.
And what do we got, about 10 seconds ago, gang? Yeah. No, we got 30 seconds. All right, so we got 30. And I know we have to make this. We have to make this break, and we got to hit it. So, but have you been to a Marines ball?
Every year I was in the Marine Corps. In fact, I went to three Marine Corps balls my last year because I knew it was going to be my last year. I was going to miss it.
Okay. I got to say, we'll be right back right after this message. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
This is the Blaze Radio News. I'm Dave Perkins. One U.S. Airman dead, two more missing after a typhoon strikes Okinawa with winds up to 150 miles per hour. The men swept out to sea. The Japanese Coast Guard pulling one from the water, later pronounced dead at a local hospital. Rough seas complicating search and rescue for the other two members of the U.S. Air Force missing in the storm at Okinawa.
We know that there are going to be other concerns and rumors, and we'll track every one of those down.
The CDC director worried that Americans are overreacting to Ebola, the Blaze Radio's Tom Peace reporting.
We want people to be concerned, but appropriately concerned, about people who've had the symptoms that might suggest that they need testing for Ebola.
CDC Director Dr. Thomas Frieden on CNN State of the Union confirming there is still only one case of Ebola that's been diagnosed in the entire country. I'm Tom Peace, The Blaze News.
Another day, another Capitol Hill resignation. The Blaze Radio's Ken Steven.
The Secret Service needs a new director and one without ties to the agency. That from New Hampshire Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte.
Needs to be a fresh view of what's happening at the Secret Service, not someone who is ingrained in the culture they're existing now in terms of the hierarchy.
Ayotte on Fox News Sunday, also calling for the Secret Service to be moved out of the Treasury Department and into the Department of Homeland Security.
First ground beef hits an all-time price high. Now this from the Blaze Radio's Greg Moore.
A Texas beef processor is recalling more than 90,000 pounds of ground beef after a number of customers complained about finding pieces of metal in it. The products from the Sam Kane beef processors of Corpus Christi have sell-by dates from September 29th to October 8th, with establishment number 337 on the USDA market inspection. The recall was sparked after four separate complaints were made. One person says they chipped a tooth.
I'm Dave Perkins. This is news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth lives here.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. This portion being brought to you by Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans. And still with me right now is Enon West, the CEO, president of Rally Point. While you were there, you formed an organization. You had a partner there, and you came up with this great idea. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, when I left active duty, I learned about all sorts of new social media tools that I wasn't exposed to because of my time in service. And I thought that this was a great opportunity to learn what I found in the private sector and bring it back to the military. And so I co-founded Rally Point, which is an online network of service members, veterans, retirees. It allows them to reconnect with old friends. It allows them to find new friends. It allows them to connect with people in the industry, for example. So somebody's a veteran that was a scout sniper, let's say, wants to find other people who are former scout snipers. That bond means something. That's a bond of service. And so Rally Point is an online, you know, community, basically, of service members and veterans, which is what our business does full-time. It creates the tools for people to connect, to find their old units, to find their old friends, and make new friends.
What's that email ad, or what's that website?
So it's rallypoint.com, R-A-L-L-Y-P-O-I-N-T, rallypoint.com. It's on the web. There's also an iPhone app and an Android app as well, of course.
And does it cost hundreds of dollars to be a member?
No, so it's completely free to members. We have, you know, we're very fortunate that we as a business, what we do is we help employers, so companies that want to hire military personnel, recruit on Rally Point. And so that's who, you know, helps keep the lights on for us, and it's free for everybody to join.
And how long have you been in business?
We launched almost 2 years ago.
Huh.
We launched on Veterans Day 2012. We've got about 370,000 members now.
370,000 Veterans Day. Well, you know, that's when we started our program. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great things start on Veterans Day. Well, speaking of Rally Point, I went to Rally Point, went through their great large database, and they gave me a hand in finding our next guest. So please stay with us, Enon. We haven't lost you yet. So we're going to kind of keep you on hold, but with me now from Rally Point is Derek Herrera. He's a veteran Marine Special Operations officer. He was leading his team during combat operations in Afghanistan when he got his experience. Welcome to Veterans Radio, Derek.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You were a part of a team. You heard what we were talking about. Well, tell us something. I mean, I don't want to do the who, what, where, when, and why. I would just love to have you guys, both of you guys, in front of me in a case of beer and just start going. So, tell us about Scouts, Snipers, Derek.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you asked that question, Bob. So I've been in the Marine Special Operations Command, which is somewhat similar to some of the experience and things that Enon's had with Scout Snipers. We don't fulfill the same roles all the time as Scout Snipers. So Scout Snipers are the masters of observation and sniping and reconnaissance reporting. And although a lot of the special operators that are currently serving in the Special Operations Command with MARSOC or the Marine Special Operations Command, we have those skills, but we're focused on a very wide array, the whole range of special operations.
Tell us about the Combat Hunter program.
Yeah, so sometime shortly after the invasion of Iraq, there was a lot of feedback coming from the battlefield, and it quickly circulated and became widely spread that observation theory, observation techniques, memory recall, all the things that Enon explained that he's trained with scout snipers and scouts are important for all troops, whether it's for battlefield detection of certain changes in baseline to the environment that may signal other cues, or reading body language cross-culturally. All those things are really important for different Marines and soldiers while they were deployed. And so what the Marine Corps did is they came up with a program to try to catalog and capture some of the best practices that snipers traditionally use, and try to train those techniques with all troops to try to make them, allow them to benefit from those types of skills.
How often would you be out in the field?
As much as possible. Really in the workup. So I deployed to Iraq in 2008. That was my first deployment, and I deployed as an infantry platoon commander. And up the year leading up to that time, when we were doing the pre-deployment training and working to build our team and the teamwork and cohesion within our platoon, we went to the field really often, probably I'd say average 2.5 to 3 weeks out of the month.
You're talking about building the team. Well, we talked a while back. We had an author on Level Zero Heroes, and he talked about bonding. Why don't you tell us about that, Derek, the bonding in your organization?
Yeah, the bonding is, as any veteran can understand, you build these relationships with other teammates and go and do these these incredible missions and accomplish great things. It's truly powerful, and it really resonates. And that's something that I've found as I'm transitioning now that a lot of veterans still long for. And that's what I think is really great about Rally Point with Inan and his team there. They've created a community to leverage some of those social media techniques to reinvigorate bonding and let people know that once they transition, they're not alone, and offer new ways to connect, which is really interesting and exciting that he's doing that for veterans. So this is actually the first time I've met Inan, but I've seen Rally Point. I've seen that it's been very successful in the past. So definitely want to congratulate him on his success for that.
You know, in doing this program for 11 years and 600 different programs that we've broadcast, and when I meet you folks, you and I'm going to say kids, you know, and I'm not saying that as a pejorative at all, but you guys and gals, you have your own little bond. I mean, that's all right to talk like Dale and I when we would interview some of you folks on past programs, but I noticed that you would when there were two or three of you in the studio, that you folks would get off by yourselves for a while and talk and well, why don't you tell us about that about that whole bonding and how you feel about one another? Go ahead and say it.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. That's a very interesting point and something that I've really come to understand recently. So about 2.5 years ago, I was injured in Afghanistan and when I was shot by an enemy fighter. And so over the past few years, I've been rehabilitating and I'm now transitioning from active duty to a new role at the company called RuckPack. And that's a nutritional supplements company that manufactures healthy alternatives to 5-Hour Energy. And offers vitamin and nutritional support, and we're growing. And so recently I've come into the position where I'm interviewing and looking to hire new salespeople and operations and logistics personnel to help build our team. And I had the opportunity to either hire industry experts who weren't in the military or try to hire people that have some of the experience, but have served in the military. And I've interviewed both, and it's I'm still making the decision now, but what I continue to find is just there's something really incredibly powerful about having the shared experience and the shared bonds and the common bonds that are built in the military. And so that's really something that I've come to notice, especially after I've been injured and spent these past couple years talking to veterans, both off of active duty and injured veterans that are transitioning and going through that process as well. So it's really hard to explain at times, and I don't know that it's the same for other generations, but I can tell you that this generation of Americans that are coming back from war have significant bonds and shared understanding and awareness. And it really goes a long way, especially as I'm finding today in the civilian world with people that work in different corporations across America.
You know, and I could see where Rally Point is the social media for military people. Is that correct, Inan?
Custom for the military. Rally Point is custom built for the military. It speaks the military language, so people are looking to connect with others based on what units they served in or what their specialty was or common deployments they had. That's all there, and to make some recommendations for you on people you may know and people you should meet, people you should connect with. It's a way to take a world of veterans and bring them to your, you know, to your phone, to your laptop, and for you to connect with them.
Now, Inan, give us an anecdotal story on bonding that you witnessed or observed when you were a commander.
There's so many.
Pick one.
I've been thinking about how to best explain this bonding as you bring it up here. And I think for somebody who maybe didn't serve, the best way I can explain it is you're traveling overseas, and all of a sudden, you know, you find somebody you went to high school with at the airport or something like that, right? Or somebody from your hometown, if you grew up in a small hometown, at a random restaurant, and you're in a foreign country, you're immediately going to, you know, have the instinct of introducing yourself, saying hello, hey, what are you doing here, and here's what I'm doing here, and how have you been, what's going on? You're in a strange land, and you have a common bond with somebody, you know, you happen to go to school with or have a hometown with. I think to a certain extent it's very similar with veterans, that I meet somebody who was a Marine, especially somebody who served in one of my old units, no matter where I am in the world, in the United States or anywhere, I have an immediate bond with that person. You know, examples is one of my junior Marines, Blake Cole, who's a very junior Marine list guy when he was in my platoon. We kind of lost touch for a long time, you know, as people go on their separate ways. I've been with a lot of different commands and units. I get an email from him, I think, about 7-8 years after I last last saw him, saying, hey, sir, I'm getting commissioned. I'm going to be a second lieutenant. I'd be honored if you came to my commissioning event. And, you know, I had not talked to him in 7 years. But the fact that we had served together, you know, he tracked me down and found me and said that, you know, he wanted me to come to his commissioning ceremony because we had a bond of service. Even though we only served together for a year, you know, almost 10 years ago, it was that experience created a lifelong bond that no matter how long time goes, whether 10 years or 20 years, we're going to have a common bond. We're going to want to see each other and talk to each other and share our experiences in the future.
Derek, what were some of the ritual, or give us a ritual, like eating goldfish? Of course, it wasn't that, but something like that, that you, a new man coming into the team, tell us about what would be some of the rituals that you would put them through.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, I don't recall any sort of rituals that we put any guys through, especially in the Special Operations Command at the time that I had gotten there. We really just were so focused on preparing for deployment to Afghanistan because we knew we were going to one of the most violent regions of the country that really it wasn't any sort of ritual or hazing or anything. It was just you get there, you show up, and you just work as hard as you can to get this team ready because there was so much work to be done. And so as far as rituals and things, I don't know that there was anyone to really stick out in my mind, but just – Every single person I think of, you know, that came into the team was challenged consistently and tested, and they continued to be tested in the training, with increasing responsibility and tasks that were more and more complicated to try to see how much they could bear until they failed. So we pushed them to the limit and see exactly what they were made of and how far they could go. And then once we've identified that, you know, we have a known quantity and we know exactly how incredible these guys are, all the stuff they can do, and then really use that to foster the sense of collaboration and teamwork and knowing each other's strengths and weaknesses, knowing all those sorts of things that are built through all the training that we do together.
Derek, you had equipment, you had a uniform. When you went out on patrol, when you went out and did your thing, what did you have on your person?
I had a bulletproof vest, I guess, or body armor. It was a smaller, slimmer version than some of the recent variants that you've seen. It was just really just what we call a plate carrier. And so it would hold all the what we call the small arms protective insert or sappy plates. And so what I had was a large ceramic plate on my chest and then a large ceramic plate on my back. And then I also had what we call side sappies or plates. And so those were smaller inserts that would go and protect your ribs. So we've had enough armor in the past 5 to 6 years after things have continued to improve with the equipment that you can create almost 360 degrees of coverage throughout the vital organs and the areas that need to be protected while we're wearing those vests. And so I was wearing a vest. I was also wearing what you call a load-bearing vest or a fighting load carrier, which held all my magazines and grenades and radios and batteries. I also had a small hydration pouch and a backpack, and then obviously the weapons. So I was wearing my personal weapon, which was a M4, and then had a pistol.
What's an M4? What's an M4? What caliber?
An M4 is a 5.56 millimeter cartridge or round that fired through. At that point, we were using 14-inch barrels with suppressors, but that's an updated version of the M16. So the M4 is similar. Obviously, there's been improvements made to the design since it was first fielded in the late 70s or early 70s, but that was our primary weapon system that we used.
We'll be right back. We're coming on to our third break. Both of you gentlemen, please stand by. We're not done yet. So, Derek in the booth, you take it away.
Schoolcraft College is proud to have served the communities of Southeast Michigan for 5 decades. So it should come as no surprise that they're just as committed to serving those who have served our country. Schoolcraft College Veteran Services provides assistance to veterans using their educational benefits. They help with the VA benefits application process, provide academic advising, and plan programs of study according to VA guidelines. Classes are forming now in Livonia and Garden City. Visit schoolcraft.edu for more information.
Well, it's very interesting, folks, that the Marines build not only great warriors, but they also build leadership. And leadership when it comes to business, how to run a business, I suppose, if you're a commander of a Marine unit, you know all about business. And how did that play into your starting rally point?
Well, so when I left active duty, I went to business school. I didn't really have much knowledge of the private sector, and business school was a great platform for me to learn about what was out there, how to raise money, how to write a business plan, how to think about business opportunities. It was such a different mindset from anything I'd done in the military that, you know, without business school, I would have had a much more difficult time.
Whoop. Did we lose him?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay. I thought that we lost you for a second. And your rally point is where are you going to take this now? You're building up this membership, and you bring people together. Well, let me put it this way: if you had something to say to our listeners, what would you say right now?
Rally Point is the premier community for everybody who is currently serving and everybody that has previously served. People in our online community really enjoy being able to connect not just with people they served with, but also with people in other branches of service, in other components, so active duty and reserve, and also being able to connect with those that are currently serving and with the veterans. So those that are currently serving often ask questions for veterans because they are not sure about, you know, how they're going to get a job when they get out, or should they get out, or, you know, how their transition is going to be. And we have a lot of veterans and retirees who have been through that process and are there to provide help to the service members. And so it's a community that brings together something that I've never seen anywhere else, which is people across all branches of service, active duty and reserve and veteran retiree, everybody together, and makes a community that brings to the forefront the bond that everybody shares.
Derek, you had to transition, and you had to find passion and meaning in the business environment. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm currently still transitioning, so I'm still on active duty. I'll be medically retired at the end of November, but I've recently been thinking a lot about transition and going through my transition plan and really getting adjusted to life as a civilian. And so just like Enon, I'm actually finishing business school at the UCLA Anderson School of Management now, and have learned an incredible amount from all the faculty and classmates that I have there. Recently, I just took over a small company called Ruckpack, RUCKPACK, and we manufacture a caffeine-free nutritional supplement designed to support mental focus and cognitive function. We're the first caffeine-free shot to be manufactured in this manner, and we're also the only one. It was designed by special operators on the battlefields of Afghanistan.
Okay, now.
So our founder, Rob Dyer, actually created this while he was on deployment with Special Operations Unit after he was searching for a solution to find something that would offer him the nutritional support and the energy he needed to go conduct these missions. And he couldn't find it, so he created it himself. And so, again, we manufacture those. And what I've learned as a transition, same thing Enon said, which is leading in the military is very similar to leading in the civilian sector, and all those skills and all the things that we've learned transfer really well into any sort of leadership or management role. The biggest thing that I've seen a lot of veterans struggle, which I'm really happy that Enon started Rally Point 4 and has been able to help people with, is they have a hard time sometimes adjusting and finding that passion and that sense of purpose that they have. And so for me, I definitely struggled with that myself until this came around and really was able to find something and come to grips with the fact that, that I could find the same drive, purpose, and meaning leading a business as I was leading teams in the special operations in the military communities. So that's kind of my advice I've given to most transitioning veterans is that it's going to be different and it may be challenging at times, but if they can find the one thing that they're incredibly passionate about and just pursue that with the same vigor and intensity that they pursued everything that made them successful in the military, they'll be just fine. And that's really powerful. One of the biggest things I've also seen with veterans, and I think Enon can vouch for too, is just almost every veteran I've come across transitioning to the civilian sector is incredibly hardworking, talented, and skilled, and very versatile, able to accomplish a wide variety of tasks. It's just the biggest thing that separates these guys and guys that are transitioning is their ability to quickly learn new tasks and just work incredibly hard to perform and put their team ahead and accomplish whatever mission they're facing.
And they follow orders, too, isn't that right?
Yes.
That's right. That's
definitely.
Right, because we are always promoting veterans, hiring the veteran ruck pack. Is that going to be available to civilians?
It is. Currently it is, yeah.
How do we get it?
Over 8,000 stores nationwide. So
oh.
In every Walgreens nationwide. It's actually international, so we've launched into Europe. We're in Sweden, Norway, and going into Poland. And we're also online, so we're in Amazon and also on our own website. So to learn more about the product, you can go to www.ruckpack.com. That's RUCKPACK.
Now,
I also offered I'd like to extend a coupon for anybody listening today.
Ah.
And that coupon code is 20% off any order, and that is RADIO, R-A-D-I-O.
All right.
You listeners for Veterans Radio that are interested in learning more, head over to the site. That coupon code will only work on ruckpack.com.
Mm-hmm.
And just type that in when you check out, and you'll get 20% off. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Are these individual snack? Not snacks. That's not the word I want. Food supplements? Or?
Gotcha. Yeah, so they're packaged similar to 5-Hour Energy. So it's a 2-ounce package, a small plastic, what we call a shot, because you can take it down right away and just drink it quickly, and it's very convenient to travel with and everything. Packaging online, we sell them in 2, 6, and 12 packs. Obviously, the 12 packs are the most value, and so that's how we package them. And really, the benefits that we see are from people that can use them every day, once a day, for an extended period of time to support their overall mental focus and just general nutrition.
And it's going to make me, if I start doing this, it's going to make me have more hair, handsome, attractive to the opposite sex, smart, muscular,
yes.
All that other stuff. Is that true?
Absolutely. 100% true.
Oh, I want to buy.
You could say that. The biggest thing and the biggest design constraint that really Rob, the founder, tried to create, and it's I'm glad we're able to talk on this show about scouts and snipers, is sometimes other products, when you take them with caffeine or lots of caffeine, some people get jitters. And so that's specifically why we formulated this with no caffeine. Because when you think about a guy who's getting behind a sniper rifle looking to make a 1,000-yard shot, any sort of substance that's put in his body, whether it's a significant amount of caffeine or anything that gives him jitters, it's going to put his shot in jeopardy if he's making a 1,000-yard shot or even a 100-yard shot. And so that's really where our product was designed, and that's the unique feature of it, is that we still have energy support, but nothing in there will make you jittery or there's no harmful stimulants. So there's no caffeine, no harmful stimulants like taurine or ginseng or anything else like that. It's all a proprietary blend of ingredients. It's all designed just to support mental focus, slight boost to energy, and cognitive function.
Folks, I want to encourage all of you to go to Derek, what's your other website that you have up
there? Yeah, my personal website, if
yes.
You want to follow some of the journey I've been on, is a personal blog, and that's just DerekHerrera.com.
And how do you spell Herrera?
www.DerekHerrera.com, and that's spelled DerekHerrera, DerekHerrera.com.
Enon, we've only got 2 minutes. Can you believe that? It's almost program's over. But now one of your members of Rally Point has this. How many others in Rally Point in that large membership block are doing their own entrepreneurial thing?
But, you know, nationally, almost 10% of all veterans own their own business, whether it's self-employed or a small business. And so veterans are very entrepreneurial. So, you know, that means that there's thousands and thousands of veterans on our site that are entrepreneurial, and they can be a great network for each other. Starting your own business is one of the hardest things that one can do in life. And connecting with other people that are sharing in your goals, whether that is starting your own business or transitioning from the military or trying to find a new job or just trying to find people who understand what you've been through, is difficult. And that's one of the things that motivates us at Rally Point, is to build a platform that connects all these people together.
One last comment, Derek, from you. We got a minute. You got about 20 seconds. Give us a comment.
Yeah. The comment I'd like to say is just specifically to any of the transitioning veterans out there, there's a lot of tools available to you, specifically both Rally Point and there's a lot of other organizations and groups that support the transition process. So if you're interested in learning more, you know, feel free to email me. You can go on my website. It has a contact form there. Also at Ruck Pack, we have a give back pack and also a veterans distributor program where you can sign up and start making money and learning how to run your own business as part of Team Ruck Pack. So thanks for listening. And as I mentioned, if you're interested in learning more, go to my website, email me, or you know, next time you're in Walgreens, stop by and pick up a Ruck Pack and try it out.
Enon, we have about 10 seconds. Say something for our listeners that you'd like to get across.
Sure. If you're a veteran, or even more importantly, if you know a veteran, it's very important they know about Rally Point. It's a tremendous resource for them to